How many people are saying, oh, we need more gun control? How many people are saying, if only God was more in our schools? How many people are blaming it on this politician or that politician? Every article I read had the question, you know, will this impact President Obama's stance on gun control, and will he take more action because of this? Another article I read was about how Mike Huckabee was blaming this on our politics. And so from both sides, you've got the questions and the blaming, the blame game happening. And I recognize that response. I recognize it in myself. When there is great pain, when there is something that seems that I can't respond to or help out with or cure or I don't want to face or look at, my first response is often to find the reason. Now, if only this person had had a better diet, then they wouldn't be dealing with this. Now, if only they had been watching more carefully, they wouldn't have had that accident on the road. If only they had gone to a therapist, then they wouldn't have this problem. If only, and all of those if onlys, all those ways I want to blame and find a reason for someone's pain and try to analyze it and figure out are all ways that it makes it easier for me to stay a little bit more removed from it, to not have to enter it in such a profound and intimate way. It's so easy to push that away, and maybe you don't do that, but I know, and the more I've worked in, when I was working in a hospital for a summer, I really had to face that in myself, that tendency to want to push it away, to want to almost laugh at first because it's just too painful to take in, and I wasn't sure that I could go into that kind of pain, that I could be a part of it, that I could respond to it. Because if it's that out here, then I don't have any responsibility for it. It's not my fault. It's someone else's fault. And I can kind of stay removed, and I can kind of keep a shield around myself. And I even, you know, this week before Friday, I was listening to all of the comments about this fiscal cliff standoff, you know. And no one really wants to make a move. And all the commentators were saying, no one wants to do anything because they don't want to be blamed for it. So in our political climate, it's the same thing. You know, we want to blame the other party. We want to hold off and do any constructive help because it's just easier to wait for the other person to make the move, and then we can put all the blame on them instead of getting messy in the solution ourselves. It's a common response. But our text this morning invites us to a different kind of response when we see pain, when we see messiness. And the text is from Luke 5, starting in verse 17. One day while Jesus was teaching, Pharisees and teachers of the law were sitting nearby. They had come from every village of Galilee and Judea and from Jerusalem. And the power of the Lord was with Jesus to heal. Just then some men came carrying a paralyzed man on a bed. They were trying to bring him in and lay him before Jesus. But finding no way to bring him in because of the crowd, they went up on the roof and let him down with his bed through the tiles into the middle of the crowd in front of Jesus. When he saw their faith, he said, "Friends, your sins are forgiven you. Friend, your sins are forgiven you." Then the scribes and the Pharisees began to question, "Who is this who is speaking blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God alone?" Then when Jesus perceived their questionings, he answered them, "Why do you raise such questions in your hearts? Which is easier to say, 'Stand up and walk'? Your sins..." Sorry, which is easier? I'm older, closer I get. The smaller this print becomes. "Which is easier to say, 'Your sins are forgiven you,' or to say, 'Stand up and walk'? But so that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins," he said to the one who was paralyzed, "I say to you, stand up and take your bed and go to your home." Immediately he stood up before them, took what he had been lying on, and went to his home, glorifying God. Amazement seized all of them, And they glorified God and were filled with awe, saying, "We have seen strange things today." So picture the scene. You've got all these scholars sitting around. I'm picturing like all of my seminary professors and some, you know, influential pastors sitting around to hear this new young upstart preacher, healer, see what he has to say, see if they agree. They have their systems, they have their systematic theologies in place. They might not have called it then. They've got they've got a religion that's working for them really, really well, at least on the surface. They've got their ways of analyzing things, their scholastic method, and they're listening to Jesus. People who have it seemingly all figured out. And in drops, I still can't quite figure out how they dropped him in, but in drops, this man in obvious pain. Into this scholastic environment, into this learning environment, into this kind of cold analysis, drops real pain. And they have to confront that, they have to look at it, and what is their first response? First response is to blame and to analyze and to figure out all the reasons why Jesus should not reach out and forgive this person, why he shouldn't reach out and heal him, why rushing into the problem and addressing it is in some way theologically inappropriate. That tendency to blame is so strong. And as one who, you know, is fairly schooled in religion myself, I know the tendency. I say, now how does this fit into my system? But when you're looking at pain, that much pain, and you're looking at that kind of reality, you have a choice to make. And we see some contrast. We see the religious scholars holding themselves back from that, holding themselves in judgment, holding themselves in analysis. And at the same time, we see the friends who are looking at their friend and knowing that something has to be done, who are willing to risk something and tear a roof off, literally, to get their friend to Jesus. And we have Jesus, who doesn't make any excuses, who doesn't ask any questions, but just reaches out and releases this man from all that he's dealing with physically and emotionally, who offers freedom. It's quite a contrast between the religious scholars. I think we often hold ourselves back because we can't solve all the problems, because we can't cure people, because we don't exactly know what to do. And we've also seen so many times where people have tried and it's gone wrong. Someone shared with me this week about growing up in Oklahoma, and Oral Roberts was just beginning his healing ministry during this time, and a neighbor was struggling with physical ailment of some sort, couldn't walk, and this neighbor was sitting in front of the television screen, and Oral Roberts said, "If you just place your hand on the screen, you'll be healed." And so she did. And nothing happened. And the disappointment and the letdown of not being healed was powerful and paralyzing even more for her. And so it's a complex thing, this healing and curing, and what can we do? And those of us particularly who are Presbyterian or mainline, you know, we're not into all of that healing and curing stuff. You know, we're not exactly sure what to do about that. And so it's easier to just kind of hold ourselves back. I think there's a real difference between healing and curing. Curing is really important. We need doctors. We need symposiums. We need conferences on world poverty. We need people to go in and address issues and help provide a response. We need band-aids. We need surgery. We need strategic plans. We try to be really smart in our church about how we respond to those who are in need, about how we use our resources to address huge global crises. The issues of curing and response and analyzing are very important. But in spite of that, even with a cure, even with the Band-Aid, we need healing. And healing comes in relationship. Healing comes by reaching out to someone and listening. Healing comes by calling and following up. Healing comes when those four friends grab their friend and say, "We're in this with you." Healing steps into the pain and is with someone in it. Healing is very different. Although it often comes alongside a cure, healing can come without a cure at all. And that is what we're called to do in this story. It's so interesting. When Jesus identifies himself, he doesn't identify himself as the Son of God to the religious scholars. As they test him, he doesn't go back and say, "Well, you know, let me give you this proof of my divinity." He actually calls himself the Son of Man, as if to say, anyone can do this. As anyone who is human can do this kind of work. This kind of work of forgiving and reaching out and caring and addressing. And you never know what's going to happen when you do that. You never know. I was thinking this week about a friend of mine named Richard, and his cousin and her husband were good friends of mine. And Richard struggled with drug and alcohol addiction for all of his adult life. And when my friend was my voice teacher in high school, so I would go over there while Richard was living with them. And I would get to interact with him, and I got to know him, and he became kind of like a big brother to me. And he was at a time in his life where he was dry, and so he was living with them. But as time went on, in the next few years, he struggled again, and he ended up in rehab, and eventually he died because of his addiction. And by all accounts, you would say there was no healing for Richard. But when I think about watching him listen to me, he would come to my little recitals and he would listen to me sing. And I see the look on his face. And when I think about the moments that we shared, when I think about seeing him in church and seeing people love on him and seeing him love on other people, there was all sorts of healing that happened in Richard's life. And in the end, it wasn't this big, wonderful cure. It wasn't this healing that we all want to celebrate. And yet there was healing all along the way that happened because people reached out to him and because he also learned to reach out to others. So healing is kind of always happening. It's always an undercurrent. It's something we can always offer, even when there's no cure or even when we're not exactly sure how to fix the problem. Jesus invites all of us to heal. And part of how we've been taking that seriously here at First Press is through our project in Guatemala. As I mentioned before, I just returned from there about 2 weeks ago. And we're involved in a lot of hands-on good work. We are building smokeless stoves. We are helping children get education. We are building houses. We're working on getting healthy latrines and water filters, and really trying to be a part of helping the community of San Lucas Toliman move to greater health. A lot of curing that we're doing. But we really believe that just sending, if that was all we were there for, then just sending a bunch of money would be enough, right? Just sending money and letting them do the work and making sure it gets done, that would be all. But for us, it's much more. We're in a 5-year partnership in this one town with Habitat Guatemala, and we're saying we're here. We're here to be with you. We're here to build with you. We're going to come back twice a year. We're building relationships. We're connecting with people. And we're finding that not only are we there to be a part of healing them, but they are healing us by their warmth and their hospitality, by the privilege it is and the honor to be allowed into someone's home to build. It's a healing relationship as well. And it's hard to describe in words, and so I've brought this morning just a short clip. There's some filmmakers that are doing a documentary about our relationship with Habitat for Humanity in Guatemala. And this has no words, but it does, you will see, do you remember the password? All right. But it's just music and images, and you'll see some of the healing that happens when we're there.
How long will you hide your face? How long till you answer me? How long will you hide your face? How long till you answer me?
See why so many of us have fallen in love with Guatemala. The woman who was cooking on the stove, her name is Juana, and she has 5 children and 1 on the way. And she was cooking over her open fire, and that was on Monday. And on Thursday, Steve and Susan, who lit the candles earlier, helped build her stove. And it should be cured, and I imagine this past week she started cooking on her new smokeless stove. And you saw some of the homeowners we built with. What really touched me, too, about that video was the song that they chose to put in the back was from Psalm 13. How long will you hide your face, O Lord? How long until you answer me? But I trust in your unfailing love. I trust in your unfailing love. I don't know where you're called to be a healer, but I know that it is an act of trust in God's love to enter into those places, to not play the game of blame that holds us back, of analysis in a way that prevents us from entering into the situation and getting our hands dirty. We are all called to be healers. We are all sons and daughters of men and women, as Jesus said, invited to use our hands, to use our hearts, to use our voice to heal. And in this season, when we remember a child who came, what more healing gift is there than a child? A child who came and grew up and asked us and empowered us to heal. May we respond that way. Some of you may have read this last couple days, the quote by Mr. Rogers. He said, "When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping.' To this day, especially in times of disaster, I remember my mother's words. And I am always comforted by realizing that there are still so many helpers, so many caring people in this world. Let us be those caring people, those helpers, those healers in this world." And now, as we prepare to give our tithes and offerings, I invite the ushers to come forward.